Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back, curious minds, to another deep dive. Today, we're plunging into a truly monumental book, Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch.
Oh, absolutely. It's a real treat to get into this one. Tartt, you know, she's almost legendary for how infrequently she publishes.
Right, like 3 novels in 3 decades.
Yeah.
That level of meticulousness, that perfectionism, it really comes through in The Goldfinch.
It does, published back in 2013.
And it's this amazing blend, isn't it? It's got the depth, the psychological complexity of, say, Dostoevsky, but then it's got this like incredibly intricate plot, almost like a mystery novel.
Yeah, and that huge sprawling feel, like something out of Dickens, a real epic tapestry.
No wonder it won the Pulitzer in 2014. It just sparked so much conversation, people arguing, you know, was it this brilliant modern masterpiece or maybe a bit overwrought?
It definitely made its mark, cemented her reputation, I think. It just pulls readers into this incredibly immersive world.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Our goal today, really, is to explore how one single awful event and this stolen painting, how they shape a boy's entire life, nearly 2 decades, big questions about art, grief, identity.
And I'm really looking forward to it. It's such a powerful character study. The core idea, you know, it's simple on the surface. 13-year-old boy, museum bombing, priceless painting, a life-defining secret.
Right.
It's a classic Bildungsroman, that coming-of-age story arc. I think anyone who's had those moments, those unexpected turns that change everything, will find something that resonates here.
So where does Tartt actually drop us into the story?
Well, it grabs you immediately. We start with Theo Decker, our protagonist, but he's older. He's in an Amsterdam hotel room, just consumed by despair, looking back.
So right away, there's this sense of darkness.
Melancholy, anxiety, loneliness. It sets this almost fatalistic tone before we even know why. Then boom, the flashback.
The big one.
13-year-old Theo. He's at the Met, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, with his mom, Audrey, who he adores. And then just chaos, a terrorist bomb.
Devastating.
He survives somehow, but his mother doesn't. And in that immediate aftermath, smoke, debris everywhere, a dying man, Welton Blackwell, gives him a ring and tells him, urges him to take the small painting, The Goldfinch, by Karel Fabricius.
And he just does it in that state.
In total shock. Yeah, he just takes it. A priceless 17th century masterpiece.
Yeah.
An impulsive act born of trauma.
Wow. And that moment, that single act becomes everything.
It becomes the secret access, yeah. The thing his whole life pivots around. It's his most treasured link to his mother, to that lost world of beauty.
But also a massive burden, right?
Oh, absolutely. A source of constant gnawing guilt, fear. It ties him to this life of lies, that little painting. It ends up symbolizing his entire existence, really.
So what does this all mean? That's what the book explores, right? Can beauty save us? What's the link between art and life? Authenticity, forgery.
Destiny versus free will. All of it.
And Theo himself is caught in this tug of war. He wants normalcy, a regular life, but he's constantly pulled back by the trauma, by the secret.
Which makes him such a fascinating character to follow.
Definitely. Let's talk about him and the key people around him. So Theo Decker starts as this sensitive kid, smart, loves his mom, but the trauma, it sends him drifting, self-medicating.
Yeah, and making increasingly dubious moral choices. It's not a simple story of decline, though. It's complicated. A painful journey towards accepting his, as he puts it, crooked life.
And who are the main people influencing that journey?
Well, first, there's Boris Pavlikovsky. You could almost call him Theo's dark mirror image.
Okay.
He's this charismatic, worldly, but utterly nihilistic Ukrainian kid Theo meets later. Their bond is intense, forged in neglect, addiction, petty crime, mostly in Las Vegas.
It's like trouble.
Oh, he represents chaos for sure, but also this incredibly fierce, unwavering loyalty. And weirdly, Boris is actually key to Theo's eventual path towards a kind of redemption.
Interesting. Complex friendship. And who else?
In complete contrast, you have James Hobie Hobart. He's really the moral anchor of the book.
The furniture restorer.
That's him. Gentle, kind, deeply principled. He restores antique furniture. He becomes a sort of surrogate father to Theo, representing stability, craftsmanship, authenticity. His workshop is a sanctuary.
The safe haven against Theo's spiraling.
Exactly. A stark contrast to Theo's later slide into fraud.
Then there's Pippa.
Yes, the unrequited love.
Right. She was also in the museum during the bombing. She embodies beauty, loss, this sort of unattainable ideal for Theo.
Mm-hmm.
Their shared trauma links them, but always at a distance.
And briefly, the Barbers, his first guardians.
Yeah, the Barber family, they take him in right after the bombing. Wealthy Park Avenue tykes. They offer this kind of cold, sterile stability. And later, Theo gets engaged to their daughter, Kitsy, which really represents the fake, constructed life he tries to build.
What's fascinating here is you see how all these people just pull Theo in totally different directions.
Mm-hmm. Hobie represents integrity. Boris, chaos. Pippa, this idealized lost beauty. They force him to confront different parts of himself, don't they?
Absolutely. Hobie's dedication to restoring things, making them whole and true, versus Theo eventually selling fakes. It's a powerful contrast. It really makes you think about how relationships, good and bad, shape who we become.
So let's trace that crooked line of a plot. Where does it start right after the bombing?
Part one, New York, the immediate aftermath. Theo's living with the Barbers on Park Avenue. It's all surface order, but inside he's a mess, holding on to his secret.
And that's when he first meets Hobie and Pippa.
Yes, he finds Hobie's antique shop, Hobart and Blackwell. Meets Hobie, meets Pippa, develops this intense, almost immediate crush. But this fragile stability gets blown up when his estranged, deadbeat father, Larry, suddenly shows up.
Right, and pulls him away from that.
Rags him away, really. To part two, Las Vegas. A total contrast, this desolate, empty suburb. Theo's miserable, living with his neglectful dad and his girlfriend, Zandra.
And that's where Boris comes in.
Exactly. This is where Theo meets Boris. They become inseparable. Shoplifting, drugs, alcohol, deep conversations. And crucially, Theo shows Boris the painting.
Oh, wow. He shares the secret.
With Boris, yes.
Yeah.
Then Larry dies in a car accident, maybe drunk driving, maybe suicide. It's ambiguous. Theo seizes the chance and makes this incredibly risky escape all the way back to New York, back to Hobie.
Quite the escape. So back in New York, what happens?
We jump forward 8 years, parts three, New York again. Theo's now working with Hobie, first as an apprentice, then as a partner in the business.
He seems okay on the surface.
On the surface, yes. Successful. But underneath, he's got a serious prescription pill addiction. And worse, he's running this secret scam, selling expertly crafted fakes as genuine antiques through the shop.
Betraying Hobie, basically.
Hugely betraying Hobie's trust. He's also engaged to Kitsy Barber, sort of settling for a conventional life while still obsessed with Pippa. But then things start to unravel. A shady character named Lucius Reeve confronts him. He knows about the fakes. And he suspects Theo has the stolen Goldfinch. The walls start closing in.
Which leads him. Where? Amsterdam.
Part V, Amsterdam. This is the descent. Boris reappears dramatically. He's now somehow wealthy, involved in organized crime. And he drops a bombshell.
Another twist.
A massive one. Boris admits he stole the Goldfinch from Theo years ago, back in Vegas, and replaced it with a textbook wrapped to look the same. Theo never even realized.
No way. So Theo's been guarding nothing.
For years, yeah. The real painting has been circulating in the criminal underworld. Used as collateral. Boris needs Theo's help to get it back in Amsterdam.
This sounds incredibly dangerous.
It is. It leads to this violent confrontation, a shootout. Theo unbelievably kills a man in self-defense. He loses the painting again in the chaos. He hits rock bottom, despair, suicidal thoughts.
It sounds completely hopeless at that point. How does it possibly resolve?
Well, this is part six, the resolution and reflection. And Boris, in his own chaotic, unpredictable way, saves the day.
Boris, after stealing it in the first place.
Yep. He secretly tips off an international art crime unit about the painting's location. There's a raid, and the Goldfinch is recovered, along with other stolen masterpieces.
Wow.
Theo gets a huge reward. He uses it anonymously to buy back every single fake antique he ever sold, making Hobie's business whole again. Then comes the hardest part, confessing everything to Hobie.
How does Hobie react?
He's devastated, naturally, but ultimately, he forgives Theo. It's not a neat, happy ending, though. The final part is this long, philosophical reflection by Theo.
What does he conclude?
He accepts his life, the crooked line. He finds meaning not despite the chaos and bad choices, but maybe because of them. He recognizes the profound impact the painting and art in general had on him. And he starts this personal mission, traveling the world, trying to return lost or stolen items to their rightful owners.
So the crooked line leads to a kind of understanding, a unique purpose.
Exactly. It suggests life isn't about straightforward paths, but about finding meaning in the detours, even the dark ones.
Okay, let's dig into some of those deeper meanings, the key themes Tart is exploring here. First, the enduring power of art and beauty. That painting is central. How does she argue beauty can actually sustain us?
Well, for Theo, the goldfinch isn't just paint on wood. It's, like you said, a tiny explosion of life. It's proof that something beautiful survived the destruction that killed his mother. It's an anchor.
A reason to keep going, almost.
Yes. It's this tangible piece of beauty in history that offers solace, a connection to something bigger, something potentially eternal that transcends the messiness and pain of his own life. Even when possessing it causes him immense suffering, he can't let it go. It suggests art provides this deep, almost spiritual sustenance.
That makes sense. Then there's the lifelong echoes of grief and trauma. It's not just the event itself, is it? It's how it ripples outwards.
Absolutely not. The bombing is the epicenter, but the trauma radiates through his entire life. It dictates his choices, fuels his addictions, isolates him. You see it in his nightmares, his inability to form healthy attachments, his constant low-level anxiety, his reliance on pills to just function.
It shows how unresolved grief can just shadow everything.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It becomes part of the fabric of his being, shaping him in ways he doesn't even fully understand until much later.
Okay, another big one. Authenticity versus deception. Hobie's world of real antiques versus Theo's world of fakes and secrets.
Yeah.
Can you find an authentic self when your life is built on lies?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Hobie represents complete integrity, the careful restoration, the respect for history, the truth in materials. Theo, well, he goes the other way. But the novel doesn't seem to say he's irredeemable because of the deception. It's more about the struggle. The contrast between Hobie's quiet authenticity and Theo's fraudulent life creates this constant tension. Maybe authenticity isn't about never lying, but about eventually confronting the lies and seeking some kind of truth, even if it's painful. Forgiveness from Hobie and maybe from himself is key there.
Which ties into destiny versus free will. How much is Theo responsible for his choices, and how much is he just swept along by fate, by his trauma, by Boris?
Tart keeps that ambiguous, which feels very true to life. Theo himself voices this. We don't get to choose our own hearts. He feels compelled towards self-destruction, towards Pippa, towards secrecy, even when he consciously wants something else.
Like he's not fully in the driver's seat.
Exactly. Boris has this very fatalistic view. What will be, will be. Theo feels immense guilt, suggesting he believes in choice, but he often acts as if compelled. The novel sort of lets both possibilities hang there. Are we puppets of fate or architects of our lives? Probably a bit of both.
And finally, the ambiguity of morality and friendship. Nothing is black and white here. Especially with Theo and Boris.
Not at all. Theo is deeply flawed. He's a victim, yes, but he also becomes a perpetrator, lying, stealing, betraying trust. And Boris, he's chaos incarnate, leads Theo into immense trouble. Yet he shows this fierce loyalty. He's the one who ultimately engineers the painting's return.
So good and bad are intertwined.
Completely. Their friendship is toxic in many ways, but it's also incredibly strong, maybe the most honest relationship Theo has for a long time. Tart seems to be saying that morality isn't simple. People are complex mixes, and loyalty can exist even alongside terrible actions. It challenges easy judgments.
Let's talk about how Tart tells this story. Her style. The narration is key, isn't it? First person, but looking back.
Crucial. It's adult Theo telling us about his younger self.
Whoa.
So you get the immediacy, the raw emotion of the experiences as they happen.
Right. You feel like you're there with young Theo.
But you also get the older Theo's reflection, his melancholy understanding, the philosophical overlay. It gives the story this incredible depth, this dual perspective of lived experience and considered insight. And structurally, it's very much that Bildungsroman, that sweeping coming-of-age story like the great 19th century novels.
And the symbolism is just everywhere. The painting, obviously.
The goldfinch painting is the anchor. That little bird chained by its leg. It's Theo chained to his past, his trauma. But it's also enduring beauty, memory, guilt. It means so many things at once.
Like a prison and a lifeline simultaneously.
Exactly. And the antiques, the furniture in Hobie's shop, they represent history, permanence, authenticity. Hobie restoring furniture is a clear metaphor for healing, trying to make broken things whole again.
Well, Theo selling fakes represents his own moral decay.
Precisely. The contrast is deliberate and powerful.
Tart's descriptions too, the imagery, it's so dense, so sensory.
Oh, incredibly. You feel the places. The chalky dust after the explosion, the sterile cold light in the barber's apartment, the harsh, sun-blasted emptiness of Vegas, the rich smell of wood and polish in Hobie's shop.
It's not just background, is it? It shapes how you feel Theo's inner state.
Absolutely. The environment reflects and affects his emotions, the claustrophobia of the barber's place, the agoraphobia of Vegas. It makes his psychological journey much more tangible for the reader.
And you mentioned foreshadowing earlier.
Yeah, she weaves it in subtly. Theo's early fascination with illusion and his knack for lying it plant seeds for his later descent into fraud. Boris's inherent volatility hints at the danger to come. Even the painting itself, the chained bird, constantly whispers about Theo's own sense of being trapped. It all builds the sense of inevitability, almost like fate unfolding.
It really makes the book feel so immersive, like you're living it alongside Theo.
That's her genius, I think.
There are some lines in this book that just stick with you. That quote about hearts.
Oh, yes. We don't get to choose our own hearts. We can't make ourselves want what's good for us or what's good for other people. We don't get to choose the people we are.
It's so bleak, in a way, but also honest. It captures that struggle Theo feels, that sense of being pulled by forces inside him he can't control.
It really speaks to that theme of destiny versus free will, his feeling of being enslaved by his own damaged nature, his compulsions. It's a moment of stark self-awareness, maybe.
But then there's that other quote, the one about art and death. It offers a kind of counterpoint, doesn't it?
It does. It's beautiful. And in the midst of our dying, as we rise from the organic and sink back ignominiously into the organic, it is a glory and a privilege to love what death doesn't touch.
That hits hard.
It really does. It's this powerful affirmation of art's ability to transcend our mortality, to offer meaning, solace, a connection to something lasting in the face of decay and loss. It suggests that beauty itself is a form of grace, a reason for being, even when life is incredibly difficult.
So what's the lasting emotional impact when you finish this book? It's intense.
It really is. You feel like you've lived inside Theo's head for years. You share the shock, the grief, the anxiety, those rare moments of beauty or connection. There's this profound ache of loneliness that runs through it, that deep human need to belong somewhere with someone.
And that relationship with Boris, it's hard to forget.
Unforgettable, so destructive, yet so loyal. It's such a complicated picture of friendship, maybe one of the most memorable and unsettling in modern fiction. The overall feeling is definitely melancholic, elegiac even, but somehow resilient. There's always a flicker of hope, even in the darkest moments.
Yeah, it definitely stays with you. And it challenges you, doesn't it? It makes you question neat ideas about good and bad, about redemption. Can a life so full of lies find some kind of truth in the end? Can you be deeply damaged and still capable of deep love?
It leaves you pondering those big, uncomfortable questions. There are no easy answers provided. Maybe the ultimate takeaway is about acceptance. Accepting the flaws, the past, the crooked lines that make up a life.
And it definitely leaves you with a renewed sense, maybe, of art's importance. And maybe more empathy for the hidden struggles people carry.
That idea that beauty can emerge from brokenness, it's powerful.
So The Goldfinch. It's really a modern epic, isn't it? Exploring how trauma changes us, but also how beauty, even tangled up with lies and secrets, offers this strange, compelling kind of salvation.
It absolutely reminds us that our stories are messy, they're contradictory, they're profoundly human, and finding our way often means embracing those unexpected turns, the detours along life's crooked line.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by ACATRA Foundation.